You input your destination time on this keypad. Say you want to go to the war between Guardia and Fiend Lords. Or witness the arrival of Lavos. Or a red letter year in science, 1000 AD.
What? I don't get it. What happened in 1000 AD?
That was the year Luca invented time travel. Tom, I'm two amiibos away from my complete collection now.
Which ones do you need?
I need the one-eyed Rathalos with the girl rider.
Okay, is that from Monster Hunter?
Yeah, it's from Monster Hunter. And I need Box Boy, or QB, whatever you want to call him.
Okay.
And then I have a complete collection, and I'm so close, and it's so far away.
Nice. I don't need another amiibo until Banjo comes out.
Not Snake?
Oh yeah, I guess Snake's pretty dope. I'll get Snake because I like the Metal Gear Solid franchise, but I really don't buy amiibos unless I actually play the character in Smash Brothers.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I'm not just gonna have a Wario amiibo sitting there looking at me.
Well, he's our boy.
No, he's your boy. I don't want that filthy thing looking at me.
I collect them because I have a problem. But let's talk about problems.
Yeah, that's a natural segue into this.
Let's talk about a big problem in the Super Nintendo.
Well, Josh, let's talk about a problem. This game was not expected, at least in our eyes, to win the March Madness tournament. We should just actually talk about that because we haven't yet.
Yeah. I was definitely shooting for Silent Hill 2.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even think Chrono Trigger would... Well, okay, I think I guess I was stupid to assume that Chrono Trigger, the game that you all voted as the winner of our inaugural March Madness tournament, I was stupid to assume it wouldn't do well. But we put it in there because we were like, it's one of those iconic SNES games, and if we don't have it in the bracket, somebody's going to go, where's Chrono Trigger? So we were like, all right, Chrono Trigger can be one of the four. And then you guys just ran with it all the way.
I was surprised that it beat out Earthbound.
Yes.
I understand it is hailed as one of the greatest games of all time. Actually, both of them are hailed as one of the greatest games of all time. But yeah, I thought there was other things on the list that people would be more intrigued to hear about.
True. I mean, we're probably the millionth pair of white guys on the internet with a podcast who are about to talk about Chrono Trigger. I don't know if we're going to add anything new to the conversation, but it will be interesting. And another thing that just when you brought that comparison up with Earthbound, I think it just speaks to the fact that Chrono Trigger was a huge mainstream Smash success. Like, Earthbound grew in popularity from kind of being a cult hit, but Chrono Trigger, just right off the bat, everybody was into this game, you know?
Yeah, it flew off the shelves. Even when newer versions of it get released, people are just constantly downloading it on new systems.
This is probably the game I own the most in most forms. I have the Nintendo DS version. I've bought it on iOS and Android. I had it on the Wii. So, I mean, it's only four. Maybe that doesn't seem like much. But for me, you know, usually when I buy a game, it's like one and done, you know?
Yeah, I have it on the Super Nintendo, I have it on the PlayStation, I have it on iOS, I have it on the DS, I have it on, I mean, you can consider Apple TV also iOS, but I have it on PC, I have it on the Vita.
Okay.
Like, I have it on the PlayStation 3. It's like, I have it a couple times.
And a fun fact about my ownership of this game and my relationship to this game, you and I have spoken about this. So this episode basically forced me to beat Chrono Trigger for the first time in my entire life. And it's kind of messed up that I've bought it this many times and never beaten it. And I've considered it one of my favorite games ever, just because everything about it is stunning, even if you only play it for 5 minutes. But yeah, I have now finished Chrono Trigger. I have now finished a JRPG. Well, actually, Final Fantasy XV was the first JRPG I finished, but this is more of like a classic JRPG.
Yeah, this is more like a traditional JRPG.
Right.
So, with that, welcome to A Cast of the Past.
Oh, yeah,
best friends get together
to
talk. And with that, welcome to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about video games and... Oh, wait.
I thought we were legit not going to do the intro.
Yeah, no, hold on. Oh, God, So the last time we recorded was 2 months ago, exactly to the date.
That's how long this game is.
Yeah.
Don't cut any of this.
So welcome to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. Like always, I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And today we are talking about Chrono Trigger, if you haven't noticed already.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yes, as voted on by you, we are covering Chrono Trigger, and this is going to be a whopper of an episode, so buckle into the epoch.
Is it a time-traveling story done right, or just another overhyped anime?
It's a time-traveling anime done right, and all of the hype is real.
I mean, what happens when the creator of Final Fantasy...
Oh, you want to talk about the Dream Team?
Yeah.
Can I run down the Dream Team really quick?
Oh, yeah. Run down that Dream
I don't want to steal it from you, but... Oh, hang on. Can you give me a basketball starting lineup beat in the background? Like, can you beatbox that for me? Now entering the court, producer, the man who brought these team members together, Kazuhiko Okoi. Next up, lead game designer, the creator of the Final Fantasy series, Hironobu Sakaguchi. Next, character designer, the creator of Dragon Ball, Akira Toriyama. Next up, the supervising composer for the game, Final Fantasy music creator, Nobuo Uematsu. And finally, the creator of Dragon Quest, the supervisor of the creation of Chrono Trigger, Fujihori! Ladies and gentlemen, the Dream Team! And the crowd goes wild.
Yeah, that was... It's, man. It's like the Avengers.
Seriously, like... I can't think of a comparable combination in any other medium. You know, it's just so many talented people coming together. I guess they had just the perfect amount of free time. And it was like, do you want to make a game that's going to transcend this genre?
What just blows my mind is you have a dream team come together and come up with this story and this idea that is so far-fetched, crazy, out of this world. And unlike anything that has come out before, get together and make a game that works.
Right. And not just works. It dominates, man. It doesn't just work. It runs the office.
Yeah. Like very rarely do you hear like of a dream combination come through and it actually be successful. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, we talk nowadays about the Avenger movies and the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is probably like the first time something like this has ever happened, where all these creators from different versions of media come together to pretty much do like a supergroup.
Not since Velvet Revolver have a team of different creators come together to create something so perfect.
So...
truly a once in a generation moment.
That is. So with this retrospective that we're going to do, we're not going to really dive into the entire plot of the game.
No, it's too much.
It is too much, too long. Not saying that it's not worth talking about, but I mean, if you've played Chrono Trigger, you understand that there's so much that we wouldn't be able to go in and dissect every piece of this game.
Like there's so many NPCs in this game with, even if they utter two sentences of dialogue, it amounts to so much lore. If you played it, you know what you're in for. If you have not played it, what are you doing? Go play Chrono Trigger. It's everywhere.
Yeah, it is everywhere.
If you're listening to it on a phone, you can play Chrono Trigger.
So, Tom, this was your first time actually completing Chrono Trigger.
Yes.
What did you think of it?
Oh, it's so much better than I praised it for, even when I only half played it. Like, seriously. I can't believe how good the story is, not just on its own, but how it expertly and beautifully balances the narratives of its entire ensemble, so that when you get to the end, it's just this like perfect conclusion for everything. It's really incredible. What about you, Josh? How, like, would you say this is the what number time you've probably played this?
So this is probably the second time I played it through complete.
Uh-huh.
Like, went through, did, like, the full story, did all the extra behind-the-scenes stuff, like, the additional, like, bonus bosses and stuff.
Okay.
I've played through it a bunch of times, gotten to a point, and then fell off, and I'm like, oh, trying to jump back into it. It was really difficult to, like, you know, you play an RPG for so long, and then you come back months later, and you're trying to figure out where to just leave off and stuff like that. And then you have to go create a whole brand new save file. And uh-huh. then I have to constantly keep doing the fair at the beginning. And I'm just like, oh, come on. So I've played the beginning half of this game so many times that it's not even funny. But the second half of the game where you get up to where you can choose to kill Magnus or not, that is still kind of fresh for me. So it was nice, like a breath of fresh air, because I was like, oh, I played through this whole first part so many times. But it's like, yeah, I like that.
You know what's interesting? And I don't mean this in a way to, like, contradict you, but I just think it's interesting. This game is so big and so long that, like, I guess that's kind of halfway through the game, but also it doesn't feel like that at all, because there's still so much to do after you make that decision. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, is that the halfway mark or is it not? You know, like, I don't know. If any game has ever been worth its pay price, it's this is one of them, you know, like a game that gives you so much for every dollar you spent on it. This is absolutely mm-hmm. probably one of the best values in game.
Yeah, this is definitely worth the $60. I think it was when it came out.
I imagine. Do you remember in the 90s games seemed so much more expensive? Like, I felt like games at Toys R Us cost like 70, 80 bucks.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. I love going back and looking at like the old flyers and be like, man, glad I never had to buy this stuff.
Yeah, the 90s weren't all that great, kids. don't believe the hype. So I have a quick question for you. Which version did you play for the discussion we're having today?
The Vita version.
Okay. I played the Nintendo DS remaster that was released in 2008.
Good.
Do you know anything specific about the Vita version? Like, is that a emulation of the original game completely, or it was anything new for that version?
It was the PS1 classics that you would download, so it was pretty much just an emulated version of the PlayStation 1 version of the game.
Okay.
So it had the cutscenes and stuff added to it, but yes. Didn't have the extra pieces that the DS version did.
Okay, yes. So yeah, you want to just clarify that? So after the game's initial success, they released it on the PlayStation, and tell us about these cutscenes, just briefly.
The PlayStation version has anime cutscenes created by Akira Toriyama, and they're very quick. There's only a couple of them in the actual game, but when they happen, it's kind of like, oh, breath of fresh air, because like we have some things that are like done in-game, but very rarely in a game like this would you actually get like full-fledged like cutscenes or something like that to kind of break up the action inside the game to kind of get you a little bit more deeper into the universe.
Yeah, and they're really great. Like, Frog drawing the Matsume to split the mountain, that's done in one of these movies, and it's, like, really visually stunning. I'm trying to think of other great moments. Frog confronting Magnus for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Jumping on the pterodactyls with Ayla to go fight the Reptites. Like you said, lots of really good moments that are, like, rendered in full.
And the nice thing about them is they don't overstay their welcome. Like, it's very few and far between, but it's only for like 15-20 seconds each clip.
Sure. I do think, yeah, I think the longest one might be Frog drawing the sword. Other than that, they're very brief.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, I played the DS version, which was a complete remaster. Besides bringing over the cutscenes from the PlayStation version, there was a lot of rewritten dialogue and basically almost a whole new translation of the game. And there's another ending that's exclusive to the DS version, which more explicitly ties this game into its PlayStation sequel, Chrono Cross. So that was kind of interesting that, like, so many years after they actually released the sequel, they were like, let's put some more material in to more firmly tie these games together.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's pretty interesting. So the game is like you said at the opening, it's a time travel adventure. You play as the silent protagonist named Chrono, who through misadventures with his friend Luca and this mysterious girl that he meets, who goes by Marley, they discover time travel and they get into numerous adventures. And this is, like we said, trying to keep the plot very simple. So Josh, what did you think about like the opening of this game? Like the opening levels, the opening hours?
It was really good at building a universe. I was surprised, especially going back into it, just thinking like you go in there, the world was so like full. There was a lot of like things going on. Everybody had a purpose in the world. And I thought that was great because like, let's look at Pokemon, for instance. You go in there, there's a couple NPCs, but they are just pretty much tell you like, Pokemon are great. This is great. You should do this.
I like shorts.
Yeah. but with this, everybody has a purpose and it feels like you are actually a part of the world itself. Mm-hmm. Like Chrono is like just a normal everyday kid. I mean, it opens traditionally like every single Pokemon game does, where your mom wakes you up and you go downstairs and then you're off onto an adventure. But it just felt full. And every place you go feels full, whether it's 65 million BC or if it's in the future or if it's at the end of time, even though that there's one person there at the end of time, or technically two people at the end of time.
Technically.
Yeah. It still feels like the world is evolving around what is going on.
Yes. Yes. So at the outset, I got to ask you, did you give any of your characters any kind of silly names, or did you just go with the defaults?
I just went with the defaults.
Okay, okay. We're going to be, for the record, referring to all the characters by their canon default names for this episode. But, you know, with most RPGs, if they give you the option, lots of people will do some silly things. I was actually watching the Summer Games Done Quick this year, and there was a running series of donations for the Chrono Trigger speedrun where it was like, donate this much money and we'll name this character this thing. So that was pretty amusing. And yeah, I'm sure people out there probably have fond memories of screwing with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to talk about, so a lot of things that this game gets praised for is everything about the game, but like, I love the second you start a new file, the first thing you hear is the sound of ocean waves, and you see and slash hear seagulls flying over the ocean, and you hear them like individually like squawking.
Mm-hmm.
And the sound design on this game is immaculate in every stage of it. Like every piece of music fits the area that it's composed for so well. And like you said, like the world feels full, but the music also like gives it that sense of atmosphere and character. You know, every place feels unique. The music draws you in, and sometimes it's soothing and sometimes it's unnerving. All the sounds that like every object makes, like if you talk to Chrono's cat, the way it meows is like charming and also like surprisingly good quality wise for a Super Nintendo game. I like the little tune in the opening where you're in the fairgrounds. How many times did you fight Gato, the karaoke singing robot?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I mean, at the beginning, I fought him a lot when I had Marley, just to kind of gain more experience points before going off, because I knew what to expect.
Yeah, he's a very good grinding option. But, like, the little noises his boxing glove makes when it comes out of his chest to hit you, and the little tune that plays when he's singing his karaoke song, like, they put so much effort into even into the smallest of stuff, and I love it. I really love it.
I really wish there was like some sort of a documentary on the creation of this game.
Mm-hmm.
So to kind of see how long it took them to make it, what they went through to create this, because there is, like you said, so many little details, so many little teeny things throughout this entire game. And if we talk about the music and stuff like that in the game and just the sound design, nothing overstayed its welcome.
Mm-mm.
Nothing got boring. Nothing got, oh, here it is again. Like every now and then, like, if I was in an area grinding, I'd be like, all right, now I'm going into another boss fight, or I'm going into another like random encounter or something like that. But I didn't hate that kind of stuff, but I like that was just normal RPG stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, sure. It sprinkles in a lot of the expectations of the genre, but it never gets oversaturated, like you said. Yeah. And I love it. I'm going to say I love it so many times in this episode. I just want to warn you.
I do like that all the enemies that you see are on the screen.
Yep. There's no...
It doesn't cut to, like, another screen with, like, how many enemies are going to be on here. Like, the random encounters. You see what you're going to be fighting. And I always like that.
Yeah. And the combat system itself is very dynamic. You basically have to manage each of your characters individually, like you would in kind of most Final Fantasy games. But what's interesting is just, like, there are combo moves or party-affecting moves that you can pull off. So you could switch between your characters at any point and direct them, and also direct which enemy they're going to aim at, but you have to be super strategic with this. Like, you have to... You kind of have to, like... After the first time you fight an enemy, you kind of have to, like, have that enemy completely studied, so that the next time you encounter it, it's like, okay, this is the best strategy for this thing. I'm going to pair Chrono and Luca together, and we're going to do the spinning fire sword attack. And I know that's not what it's called, but anyway, yeah, we're going to do the spinning fire sword attack, and that'll take it out the fastest. And then you got to manage Chrono and Luca's time to sync up at the exact point. And, you know, like, it's thrilling when you pull it off in like a big boss type area or something
right.
like that.
You just triggered so many people by not calling it the right name.
I don't care.
Speaking of triggering people, what type of fight system did you use?
I used the active battle system, not the slow one.
Okay. See, I used the wait because I'd like that more traditional style, the turn-based back and forth.
Okay. So yours was more like a traditional Final Fantasy game of that era.
Right.
Okay.
Where yours is more Kingdom Hearts-ish.
In a way, yeah, yeah. It's like a 50-50 between the two, where, like, the enemies are open and on their own clocks, so they can attack you while you're waiting. And, yeah, I like the fast-paced nature of it.
When you played through it before, how far did you get?
The furthest I got was up to 12,000 BC and the Ocean Palace, which, now that I've beaten it, I realized I was so close to being done.
Yeah.
But the last time I tried to fully play through this and I got to the Ocean Palace, I was in my period of, like, barrel-assing through games and not properly grinding, and I was not strong enough to defeat the twin golems, and I died from it. And okay, I just kind of gave up.
I used to get up to the Magnus part, and then kind of something else would come out, or I got preoccupied with other things. And it's nice to jump back into, because it is one of those games that just kind of, it doesn't overstay its welcome. It's constantly evolving. When you get bored of an area, you're like, you know that you're getting ready to jump somewhere else. And then when you have the ability to kind of just time travel whenever, wherever you want, it just adds so much more to the actual gameplay for you too.
Absolutely. And yet, like, the game overall is very episodic in a way. Like, I feel like this could easily be adapted into some kind of, like, HBO television series, because the way things flow are just super organized in these nice little chapters. Like, the intro leads into the reveal of time travel, and then the first adventure to save Marley from the past leads into the next adventure where Chrono is wrongly imprisoned and has to be freed, which leads into the next adventure where they escape to the bad future, which leads to the next adventure, which, you know, like, everything, when you get to the end of something and you get to a new era or a new point, it's like, I feel like I just fully finished an arc and now I'm moving into the next one. And it's so nicely paced for a game this big.
It really does seem like each world that you go to when you're time traveling does seem like a season of a TV show.
You can, like, do so much with this. Like,
that would be great. I'm surprised, like, they so didn't good. Try to do something like this, but I feel like this is the best way to kind of take this in.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So the storyline of the game itself is great head to toe. The character storylines, like the individual ones, that kind of, the little columns that hold up the main story, are really great in their own right. Who would you say is your favorite character?
Magnus,
yes. Okay, so this is the first time I beat it, I never got to his twist before. So this was the first time it was revealed that Magnus is less the big bad of the game and more of a sympathetic villain whose motivations are built into the fact that the actual final boss of the game, Lavos, ruined his life in a way that no one ever knew about. Mm-hmm. And so it completely reevaluates almost everything you've done up to that point, because you spent this whole game being like, oh, he's the Ganondorf. He's the Andrew Ryan. You know, he's the jerk who's pulling the strings and trying to ruin your day. And then he's like, no, the final boss that you're chasing ruined my life too. I've just been doing it solo. And then, as you said, like the fight you can choose to have with him. So did you fight, did you choose to fight Magnus on the cliffside in 12,000 BC?
No, no.
You let him go and he, you spared him and he joined your party?
Yep.
Okay.
Which is like the smartest decision to make, because he's one of the strongest characters
well, true.
For so, your party.
So I got to ask you a question.
Yeah.
When you first played the game, did you try to fight him? Or did you, like, did you know about the option to spare him?
I chose not to fight him again, because I felt like with everything that was going on with this game, with the time traveling and stuff like that, and alternating pasts and futures and stuff like that, I was like, there might be something to not. Like, why would they give you the option to fight him?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like, so that's what I was like, maybe if I don't fight him, something might happen.
Well, hey, you paid off.
I know.
So I try to fight him several times because Magnus's character has a long-standing rivalry with another playable character, Frog. And I just figured, oh, this was what this is what Frog's storyline has been building to. Frog was a knight who was transformed into a frog by Magnus's magic, and Magnus killed Frog's master. So it's Frog versus Magnus. It's
wasn't really a master. It was kind of it was his best friend.
Well, I always kind of looked at the relationship of Glenn and Cyrus. So Cyrus was a legendary knight, and Glenn, who became Frog, was I kind of thought he was his squire, like, you know, the one who like was like a knight's caddy, you know.
It was kind of the Steve Rogers, Bucky Barnes type thing,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
where okay. Rogers was weak and a little, and Bucky was the more heroic person.
Right. I mean, I'm not saying I never picked up on their deeper relationship, which the game really goes on to imply, but I just figured that was their, whatever, their connection job-wise, you know. But yeah. Okay, anyway, so it's Frog versus Magnus. It's the ultimate, like, revenge fight. So I tried to beat Magnus a couple times with Frog, but he always just wiped the floor with me. And so I eventually just said no, and then he was like, well, I'm going to, and then it was like, well, Magnus is going to join the party now because his goals align with yours. And I was like, oh, okay, great. So I just ran with it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many storylines in this game too. And especially if you complete the rest of the storylines where, you know, going back and saving Luca's mom so she doesn't, you know, get crippled.
Mm-hmm. Or Marley dealing with the family drama between her dad while the Chancellor is pulling strings to bring down the entire royal family.
Yeah, or Robo and his girlfriend mm-hmm. in the future. Like, yep. there's so many things.
Yes, or Isla and the drama within her tribe, because she's the chief of this tribe of cave people, but her cave people constituents, I guess, are losing faith in her as a leader. So, it's just so much. There's so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great. Robo, it's great.
Robo going back in the past to farm and plant in the forest, and then going into the future to see the shrine that he's like kind of like sat up on, and then rebuilding him to bring him back into the future, where you can take him back to the past and witness him building the forest that you see. And it's like, what?
It's so great. I love it.
I'm not going to get into the science behind the time travel and how it would play out. But
I'm not going to justify. I hate when people try to justify time travel.
Yeah.
Because it's always the...
Technically, you're not even supposed to be able to see yourself if it's the same person from the same timeline.
I mean, like the movie that was the namesake for the show, Back to the Future, the most simplified version of time travel you can come up with that just makes sense for the sake of the story... I'm totally cool with it. Like, so many people spent this entire summer being like, well, how did the time travel in Avengers Endgame work? And it's like, it's not as important as what it did for the story, you know? Like,
right.
And it's the same thing here. Like, the emotional payoff you get in so many moments from this game are way better than any of the shenanigans of physics and quantum, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
I don't need to know how it works. I just need to see Marley weeping when Chrono comes back to life and hugging him, because that's so satisfying and so emotional, you know?
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Well, yeah, at one point, no, let's talk about this. You want to talk about, like, gaming twists. So the main character of this game dies at about halfway mark.
Yeah.
And one, it's legit shocking and unexpected, but also it makes complete sense, and it's tragic in that way. And then you have if you go on this really difficult quest, you can undo it, and it's so emotional and good.
But that's the thing with this, you know, your main character dies about halfway through the game, but with the 16 endings or so to this game, you can actually have an ending where you beat the game without Chrono.
I know.
Like, and then there's two endings based off of that. There's one where in the future, after you defeat Lavos, they'll come back from the future and say that we need to resurrect Chrono. And then it kind of just jumps through all of it where you don't need to play through any of it, I believe. And Marley's standing there next to the tree, I think, on Death Mountain. And in the back, you see, like, a very shadowed version of Chrono walking towards her. And she goes running and then he goes to credits. Or the other one where he doesn't come back. Like, you can choose not to save Chrono if you want. And that's so crazy that, like, I mean, how many movies and how many books and stuff like that does your main character die in the middle of it? And that's it.
Yeah, not very many. But I think that's the strength of this game, is that the entire party is so strong and so well built that, like, Chrono can die and you can finish the game without him and it still feels complete, because you still feel so much for the other characters that it's like, Chrono's loss meant something to them, it means something to me, but I still saved the world, you know? Like,
yeah, and that's the thing. We talk about, well, who was your favorite character? My favorite character was Magnus, but I don't have a least favorite character, because everyone has a story.
Yeah.
Everyone has their own individual take on this game. The first time I played through it, I did not like Robo.
Okay.
But then I got and saw his whole thing in the future with the relationship and Mother Brain and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, I kind of starting to like this character now. Like,
yeah,
it makes you, like, feel different ways for these characters throughout the game. Because it's like, oh, the whole frog thing with him becoming, well, him being Glenn and then being turned into frog and then trying to go back. There's an ending where he can turn back into Glenn. Like, there's so many different things. And, like, yeah, that's kind of like a really cheesy, generic, like, hero story type thing, but certain ways that you play the game, it might not be that, and he might be a little bit more intriguing to you. Like, every character, you can love or hate every character in the game.
And seriously, like, even certain characters who get the generic cheesy ending, the generic cheesy ending is still satisfying because of what they've been through and what you want for them, you know? Like, you know, Marley making good with her dad. It's like, okay, yes, the princess, the king realizes that the princess can't be, like, caged up and she has to be free to live her own life. But when you've been through so much with Marley, you're just so happy for her that she got that, you know? It's so good. It's so good. Just quick question. Which ending did you get on this playthrough?
This playthrough, I got the main ending. I went through and did all the side quests.
Okay, so did I. So, yeah, I did all the side quests and then I crashed the Epoch, the time machine, into Lavos, the main bad guy. And as a result, I got the ending where you defeat Lavos, you're sent back to your own time period where the whole adventure began, and you get an audience with the king, and you think that Chrono's in trouble because of the trouble he was in initially in the game with being accused of kidnapping the princess, even though he and the princess were, like, on this adventure together. And then a bunch of people from the past and future show up, and you find out Luca brought them from their time periods here to clear your name. And it's super cool. And then all your companions get in the time machine to go back to their individual eras. And it is heartbreaking. Like, especially when Robo is getting ready to leave. And everyone's like, wait a minute. We stopped the evil future. That's where you came from. You probably aren't going to exist. And he's like, look, I'm not worried about it. Don't be worried about it. All that matters is that we love each other. And it's like, oh, Robo. And then, while hanging up the new bell in the town square, Chrono and Marley kind of get tangled in the balloons and they float away together in a kind of like Aladdin whole new world kind of thing. And it's really, really sweet. And I just love it. I just love it, Josh.
Yeah. No, it's good. The thing is, like, we didn't even talk about the, you know, the whole thing with the sky fortress, the sky castle.
Kaja?
Yeah.
Well, we can, because I wanted to ask you, what was your favorite environment in the game?
Oh, man. So...
because I'll tell you, mine, I pronounced it right. It's not Kajan. I'm sorry, internet. It's Kajar, the magic city. But It's so cool to explore. Yeah. And the soundtrack for it is so, like, unique and exotic and mystical. Like, oh, it's great. Yeah, Kajar.
I think that would probably be my favorite, just because where the story goes up there. Like, it takes a weird turn. Like, because you're going through, like, everything's in, like, the olden times and, like, the, I don't want to say, like, Dungeons and Dragons style, like, fantasy world. But now you go into, like, this realm of, like, magic and stuff like that. But this actually happens before the beginning of the game. So it's like, well, how was it so advanced and where we're at when we start the game? Like, and then you get to play it out and see, like, the chains being broken and them having to live together, like the people who are non-magic dwellers living with the people who are magic dwellers on the ground. And like, it's,
yeah, it's got this, like, the Legends of Atlantis in our world, you know, how we assume that there was this ancient city that through technology and magic was the best society on earth, and then it was destroyed because of their own arrogance. Like, that's Kajar is this game's version of Atlantis, you know, like it ended because they went too far. And you know, you get that. And it's so interesting. The cutscene where the magical city falls out of the sky into the ocean is incredible. We praised the anime cutscenes that were added into the game before, but I kind of think this game has several, like, cinematic moments just with its original graphics alone that are really, really good. Do you have any, like, moments that you remember that stood out?
Lavos coming out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that, just him raining fire on the world, I thought that was just a great scene.
I really had my heart broken when Robo gets beat up by his fellow, like, security robots. They just beat the crap out of him while he's saying, like, please, like, we don't have to be violent. And they just kick the shit out of him and throw him in the
garbage.
Yeah,
throw him down the garbage.
It's like, no. Oh, man. I could swear there was another one. Oh, the little cutscene that they do explaining how Marley disappeared from history because her great-grandmother was killed, and the little goblin who, like, sticks his tongue out at you, like, nya nya, after they're all dead. That was really good.
It's towards the beginning, but the whole courtroom scene.
So, okay, I want to talk about the courtroom scene real quick. If you need to catch up, the courtroom scene, I guess, how we talked about this game being episodic, that would be in, like, episode 3 of this narrative. You come back from your first adventure, and Chrono's immediately arrested for kidnapping the princess, which he didn't do. And you're put on this rigged trial. And, Josh, what verdict did you get?
So, the first time I played through, I did all the bad stuff, except for the cat.
Can you explain what the bad stuff was and how, because I think this is an interesting part of the gameplay.
Okay, so starting off, I ran over and grabbed the medallion before talking to Marley.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we were walking around, she goes to the food stand or the balloon stand or something. I go to walk away where she's like, hey, wait, hold on, I'm not done yet. And I'm like, okay. Then we get to the next screen and I took the bread. I'm just the worst person in
that
the world.
That bread belonged to that old man, and his wife made that bread for him. You monster.
I know. But then I did reunite the cat with the young girl.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're a nice guy. So yeah, so, it's like a morality system. Well, it is a morality system decades before, or not decades, a decade-ish before those would become a really hot thing in gaming, you know? So as you said at the beginning, Josh, you did all the bad things, so yeah.
I definitely went to jail.
But did you get, like, unanimously declared guilty by the jurors? There's 7 jurors.
No. So it was what, 6-1, I think I did.
6 guilty, 1 not guilty?
Yeah, because the cat was the not guilty.
Okay.
But then my second playthrough.
Okay, so I'm pretty sure the first time I did play this back in 08, I probably got it guilty because, yeah, I was doing bad things not realizing they were bad. Like, I was eating the old man's bread because I just assumed, oh, it's a free health refill. Like, great, the game provides that. And then it turns out, oh, you were stealing his lunch. But this time, I purposely went out of my way to get the best verdict possible. So, like, I brought the girl back to her cat, and I did everything like a good boy, and the only way they were able to get me is in like the kind of trick question at the beginning of the trial where the chancellor is basically like, did you talk to the princess first or did she talk to you? And it kind of doesn't matter because he's just like, ah, you talk to her no matter what, you're guilty,
right?
So I got a 5-2 not guilty verdict. And I was like, oh, whoa, does that change anything? And it doesn't.
Nope.
Because you still get arrested. And the judge says, you're going to be in solitary confinement for 3 days. But then when they take you to the jail, the chancellor goes, he's going to be executed in 3 days.
Yep.
So it's like, justice is rigged.
Yeah. And that's the thing, though, with this. It's, I don't think they could have actually been able to do it. I mean, it would have been great if they did, because it would have been a completely different way of playing the game. But you're cutting out, like, 2 to 3 hours worth of gameplay.
Uh-huh.
Like, in that area. Now, it might be a little less, depending on how experienced you are in the game. It might be a little bit more. But, I mean, you're cutting out a good portion of the game if you were to get rid of that. And it's weird to how to transition that back into the actual story from what they already had.
Yeah. But, because you need to get arrested in order to escape and in order to get chased out of the castle by the chancellor and then to... In your escape, jump into a time portal and then go to the bad future. So, like I said earlier, like everything motivates something.
Mm-hmm. Everything has a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
This game created so many different things that weren't available in games at the time, like morale choices and stuff. But one thing it did, and it was, I think it's the originator of it. This game had New Game Plus.
Okay. I knew it had New Game Plus, but I actually, oh, wow. I didn't know this was a first. That's pretty cool.
I'm like 99% this is the first game to ever incorporate New Game Plus to it, which is actually a big staple in a lot of RPGs and a lot of other games. I know, like, even the Batman Arkham games have New Game Plus attached to them.
That's probably the first time I ever did a New Game Plus, honestly, was Arkham City.
I did it, I mean, with the Resident Evil games, because like, when you go through it, it's a little bit harder. You could technically say that the first Mario game had New Game Plus, but not really. It was just a code that you would type in at the end. Like, you had a different button combination, and the enemies would be a little bit harder, but your progression didn't carry over. Okay. Like, there's no way your progression could carry over in Mario, but with this, your characters stay at the same level, but everyone gets a little bit harder. Like, so you can keep going and going and going, which is awesome. I mean, you could jump right to Lavos at the end if you wanted. He's going to be a lot tougher. But you could still do it.
Also, the New Game Plus, from what I researched, affects your ability to get more endings. Like, you have to play the New Game Plus mode to get some of the alternate endings. So it really rewards you if you go further and further into it. You know,
right.
The replay value is high on this game.
Yeah. I mean, it's... I've never done the New Game Plus of Chrono Trigger. I would probably go back and do it. I would wait a little bit longer, though, because, like I said, it's... I played through it here this past month or so, and now I can take a little bit of a time off, you know, kind of recuperate now. I had my fill of RPG games.
Would you say you're going to recuperate and listen to some of this game's sick soundtrack?
Oh, bah, 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 bah.
Because I would.
Yeah, no, the soundtrack is great to the game. It's one of the best retro soundtracks, and there's so many different songs. Mm-hmm. Every character has almost like their own theme song to it.
Mm-hmm.
The battle system's different no matter, depending on where you're at. I mean, the worlds, like each area that you visit has a distinct sound that really just brings life or doesn't bring life to what is being displayed on the screen, especially when you go into the future and it's so just docile and depressing. Mm-hmm. Like the music,
oh, it is,
fits it so perfectly.
I love the overworld music when you're in 1000 AD, when you're in Poré, walking across the continent, and it's like that piano tune that just kind of like quietly soothes you as you're walking throughout the countryside. It's so gorgeous. I love Frog's theme. it is an all-time banger. There's actually there's a video game tribute band called Select Start. I don't know if they still tour or like create content anymore, but they, about 10 years ago, they used to put out a lot of good stuff, and they're just like a collection of acoustic guitar players, a couple violins, and a flute, and they play a version of Frog's theme that I absolutely love. Definitely worth a YouTube search if you can find it.
So I feel like for the past 40-50 minutes now, we've talked about how great the game is, how great it is, how great this is, how great this is. Is there anything you disliked about the game?
No. Are you kidding me? I don't know. Okay. There is one thing. I'll say one negative about the game. And this is actually a negative spurred by something another game did that I don't see very many RPGs ever do. Something I really admire about Earthbound is that after you get to a certain strength point, if you come into a random encounter, the game will just do the math and go, oh, you're really strong. You're going to cakewalk through this fight. We'll just skip it for you. And then you don't go into the battle screen. You don't waste any time. You don't have to run. You don't have to like waste mana or anything. It's just like the game goes, yeah, you'd win, and you're good to move on. There was a certain point in Chrono Trigger where I was really strong, and I was trying to just get through areas to get to like subquests or stuff like that. And if I was hit with a random encounter by a baddie, because like I didn't perfectly avoid them, it's like, I'm level like 39, and here's like a level 3 goblin, and I gotta waste time chopping him down. You know,
right?
And so a little time wasters like that did get on my nerves.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would have been a nice bonus, because it's very similar to like, oh, I just caught Mewtwo. Now I'm going to go back into Pallet Town and fight Rattatas. Like,
you mean murder Rattata.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, this game did come out a couple months after Earthbound. Okay. So the idea was out there. They could have incorporated it, but I understand it's the journey process to it, which it's normal. I mean, Earthbound, I think, is the first game that kind of did that, and I don't think a lot of RPGs have done that after.
If they have, I haven't seen them.
Right. And I think that's a great thing that Earthbound did do, which we can get to talking about Earthbound one day in the future. Ooh. But, yeah, I mean, things that I didn't like about this game, I thought some areas were a little too long.
Okay, anyone in particular?
I mean, I think it was the Ocean Palace where you had to go in and it was kind of puzzles to clear everything in this room to draw the bridge down or to go into this area here. And like, it was all over the place. Like, but at times it felt a little too drawn out. Like, we don't have so too much to show you here, so we're going to kind of draw it out as much as possible. It was kind of like a filler episode almost.
I get you. Yeah, the rate at which the high-level enemies respawned in that area made navigating the puzzles a little aggravating. And, like, it's so late in the game and so far away from an option to buy, like, recovery items that you really got to be careful in the Ocean Palace.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, other than that, I thought it was good. Now, we talk about things we loved. I mean, we talked about a lot of things we loved. We talked about a little bit of the things that we hated. Since beating this game, does it go in your top games of all time?
It absolutely does.
Yeah?
Yes. It well,
I'm not going to ask you where you would rank it, but
I would put this in the top 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't rank the top 10 right now, but like, this is a top 10 worthy game for me.
Yeah, I think the experience overall of going back and appreciating what is inside of this will probably put it in my top 10, because there is, like, this was a bold game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this game had a lot riding on it, and this game succeeded in everybody's expectations, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard to think of something in any other medium that's happened like this, because like the spearhead person behind Chrono Trigger was Sakaguchi, who I mentioned earlier. He was the creator of Final Fantasy, and he just pitched this game because he wanted to. We've talked in the past kind of about like Hideo Kojima, how he gets a lot of kind of like blank checks, and like this was just this perfect storm of like somebody who's really talented had a great idea, and they got talented people together, and they put all their resources into making it really good. Like, I'm not saying like games today don't take risks. There are a lot of risk taking beautiful games out there, but I just can't think of something this original. You know, like, when's the last time an original standalone AAA title that wasn't a remake or adapted from anything burst out and like hit the same kind of high notes that this did?
Yeah, so this is a universally praised game. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very uncommon to find someone who hates this game.
I mean, I had to struggle to say something bad about it, you know? Like,
right. I honestly couldn't tell you the last time. Maybe the first Sims.
Interesting. Plus, that had a lot of mainstream appeal. Yeah, I really don't know, dude.
Because, I mean, you think of games that, like, have come out and people are like, oh my god, this, or oh my god, that. Like, we talk about the recent God of War. We talk about Spider-Man. We talk about the Batman games. Like, These are all been adapted for something. They all have something to build off of. Where yeah. This was just a complete original idea. I know I recently talked about in an episode a little while ago, Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice. Fantastic game. One of my favorite games of all time is Shovel Knight. But these are all been adapted from other things. Like,
you know, maybe it's the indie market we have to be looking at for such a comparison, and not AAA. Like,
right.
Maybe like we're not going to find comparisons to Chrono Trigger because we don't live in that kind of game market anymore. But there's lots of groundbreaking indie games that have a lot of love, and they don't see as much financial success. But like, I think that's where that kind of creativity and originality is going to start coming from. You know,
that yeah. If we're looking around that, I'd probably say Journey would be like the biggest one that was like universally praised, and then like everything about that game was
great.
Like
soundtrack, perfect. You know?
Yeah.
And I haven't even played Journey, and I have the soundtrack on my Spotify, you know, like, just because it's so beautiful.
It's difficult to find negative things about the game, and it's even harder to find people who think negative things about this game too. Like, going online and like just looking up like reviews on it, I couldn't find a single negative thing someone like this game is the worst game ever made, this is horrible, I can't believe this. Like, the game's constantly getting released. I think this game's been released probably more times than Final Fantasy VII has.
That's kind of like the default thing that a lot of people think about when they think about Square Enix or Squaresoft, whatever, and their RPGs. It's like, oh, Cloud, you know, but it's like,
yeah,
Chrono, bro, Chrono.
Like, listen, so as of recording this, we still have two Smash Brother characters that haven't been released as DLCs.
Yeah.
I've been talking with a lot of people at my work, and I've been talking to a lot of people out and about. The final character that they announce has to be somebody that's so just crazy, because you can't keep building this up. Like, we're getting everything that everyone was that's wanted in the past. The final character that they release has to be someone crazy big. And for a while, I've thought, oh, we're going to get Geno, or we're going to get Waluigi as kind of just the, here you go, this is the final thing. It would break the internet if Waluigi would come into Smash Brothers as the final DLC character.
I would break my copy of the game if Waluigi was the final DLC character.
But, you know, it would break the internet.
Oh, my God, yeah. The grossest fan art possible would leak out of that announcement.
Now, tell me Chrono doesn't deserve to be in Smash Brothers.
I agree with you. He deserves to be. If you want to get into a big conversation about how Square already has two characters in Smash Brothers now, and I don't know if Nintendo's willing to like give one developer so many spots over others, that's like an episode in of itself. But yes, like Chrono as a representative of one of Nintendo's finest games from the Super Nintendo era, he deserves to be in this roster. I agree.
Yeah. I also think Cuphead should be in Smash Brothers, but
That's that game you beat, right? Cuphead?
Yeah. I don't know if you heard or if any of the listeners have heard that I beat Cuphead.
Wow.
And I'm really excited for the DLC to come out because then I can beat Cuphead's DLC.
Good job, man. I'm really proud of you.
Yeah, and if I'm playing Smash Brothers and somebody's is Cuphead, I could beat Cuphead all the time.
Oh my gosh, you could. You would never stop beating Cuphead. Well, beyond our strong opinions of this game, since this was like one of the only episodes we've ever had kind of previously announced, we polled some of our listeners on Twitter and all the other socials to tell us what they think about Chrono Trigger. I want to read some of these right now. So the Geek Cause podcast at the Geek Cause, we asked, hey, what do people think about Chrono Trigger? And they said, several different endings, time travel mechanics, every single character is useful and has a good background story. What's not to love about such an amazing game? Chrono Trigger is hands down probably one of, if not our favorite RPG for the SNES. Glad to see people out there still loving it. And then a little podcast called Ode to the RPG at OTTRPG. They actually sent us a pair of haikus, Josh. Josh, how about I read a haiku and you read a haiku?
Okay.
So I'll go first. Robo is so cool. Frog and Magus, epic duel. And I'm like, haiku. Smooth.
Under the pale moon, a duel to settle the score. Frog fights for revenge.
Ooh, epic. I love it. Yes. Thank you so much, O to the RPG, for those. And then last on deck, over on Instagram, Tyler Shears, 37, says, sweet, love this game so much. Simple, but effective. I absolutely agree. I love this game so much. But thank you, everybody, for the input. We really appreciate it. And thank you for voting this. This episode is literally not possible without you.
Out of all the games that you've played in your lifetime, how close has this come to being a near-perfect game?
Oh, this is a perfect game.
You think it's a perfect game?
There are very few perfect games I played, with the most perfect being the first Portal. But this is up there. I don't think this does anything it doesn't have to. And like we said over and over throughout this podcast, like, it's full and complete and nothing's wasted. I think this is perfect, just in my opinion. Even that small gripe I did have, like, that's a small gripe. How about you?
It's a perfect game.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, there's really no other way to put this. It's, I think, just the past hour of us talking about how great this game is. Like, yeah, it'll probably get annoying to some people over time that's listening, but it's in my top 10 games of all time, but I can't say it's the best. There's a difference between being the greatest and being your favorite. Like,
oh, sure.
This would make a top 5 list of the greatest games of all time, I personally believe. But, yeah. I mean, it ain't no Shovel Knight.
No, I know exactly what you mean. Like in 2007, the best picture of the year, like, the finest film made that year was There Will Be Blood. But my favorite movie of that year, it's The King of Kong. You know what I mean? Like, you, when you see groundbreaking art and you see something so well made that you know it's going to be remembered for generations, it's easy. It's like, acknowledging that's important. But if you got your favorite and it's not that, that's not a bad thing.
And you know what? I just want to end. I'm going to end with this.
Go for it.
This game is one of the greatest pieces of art ever made.
Fact.
Music, art style, gameplay.
You could take any of them on their own, and they still hold up as one of the greatest examples of that thing ever.
Exactly. Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening.
Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.